Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. I have a plethora of ladies at the table today. You can laugh, Greta. We've got Greta. She's laughing so hard.
Hello.
We've got Greta Eskridge here. We have Sally Lemos right here.
Hi.
And we have Diane and Elizabeth.
Yep. Hello.
There we
and
are.
I cannot believe I'm actually sitting at this table. I feel honored and also a little embarrassed because you guys have so much wisdom and you invited me to your girl conversation. So I'm going to do my best to just ask questions and get out of the way. But we are all sitting here for a very particular reason. We just got done with an incredible weekend, the Intentional Motherhood Retreat. Ladies, you all spoke there, did fabulous jobs. I would just love to hear highlights and give us some of the best points and some of the things that you were loving. Go. Who's going first? Man. Diane's
well,
going first.
Well, the worship. I was just to have a room packed with women. We had the worship band from Bridgetown Church came over and blessed us with their music. And yes. But watching these women who are wholly dedicated to Jesus and making great sacrifices in their lives to be completely His, and their hands raised and this beautiful band and music. It was so genuine, no show-offy kind of things. It was just, I sat there looking, kind of turning around and looking and thinking, this is what it's going to be like in Revelations when we gather around His throne. And it was beautiful. Just the worship was just worth it. Had nobody said a word, it would have been worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was such a huge highlight for me. That was so beautiful. And I think I felt like every time I walked in the room, it's like almost took my breath away to just be in the room with that many women who are also mothers and who are like fully devoting themselves to their children. And then, you know, leading up to the retreat, Mom and I knew very clearly what we felt like we were supposed to talk about. But I think I had a feeling of like, gosh, is this like too much? Are we asking them to be like too vulnerable? Is this too heavy? Like, this is only going to work if they're willing to open their hearts. And it just blew me away session after session to see the women just willing to be open with themselves, open with God, open with each other. So it just felt like we got to like stand back and watch God move in each woman's like whole being, which just felt like an honor to get to watch.
And didn't you see how amazing it was that the Holy Spirit has been almost speaking these themes to hundreds of us?
Yes.
It's like we were just kind of catching the wave of what the Holy Spirit is doing in people's lives. That was mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And though I've seen it before, it just seems so, because it was all women, all mothers, it just seemed really remarkable to me.
Yeah.
And even the four of us, how we were repeating phrases.
Yes.
That we had no idea. I hadn't seen your teaching or your teaching, Greta, and yet we were all saying such similar things and keying off of each other that only the Holy Spirit could do that. Yeah. You can never script to that.
Yeah.
Greta, what was your highlight?
I loved the hope that I felt in the room, mm-hmm. because seeing that many women who, like you said, Elizabeth, who are there to pour into raising the next generation of mm-hmm. kids who are going to be shown who Jesus is and mm-hmm. how to love him by moms who are living that out themselves. Mm-hmm. That gives me so much hope yeah. for mm-hmm. who's coming next.
Yeah.
And I think it was you, Diane, who said something about revival, and it yeah. felt like revival.
It did.
And there is a message that that's out there that is not hopeful, that mm-hmm. everything's the worst it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And this weekend reminded me that that is not true.
Yeah.
There's so much mm-hmm. hope because there are moms who are out there
yeah.
wanting to give their uh-huh. kids yeah. something so good. And that's Jesus.
Yeah.
Mm. And Sally, I got to know what, because I know that I love the lens that you look at the world through. I'd just be so curious. What was your highlight?
So for me, it felt like there was this sigh of relief when I would walk in and just seeing the intimate times together, but just friends and making new friends, that we're not alone in this. Mm-hmm. Whatever season we're in as a mother, we're not alone. We all yeah. just love our children mm-hmm. so, so deeply. Mm-hmm. And it's so, so hard. And we struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, we all yeah. struggle. And we're in this together. And there's such relief in knowing that we're yeah. not in this journey by ourselves. And mm-hmm. it just was so heartwarming to see. And I had both of my daughters were there and experiencing mm-hmm. that too. And just,
yeah. And your new grandbaby.
And my new grandbaby.
Oh,
yes. Oh, I got to hold my new grandbaby through a lot of it. So it was just so, so sweet. And I think another highlight for me, at the very end when Phil came up and spoke, I don't know if I'm not going to be able to do this without choking up,
okay.
Just such a fatherly.
Yeah.
And for so many of these women, not having a great relationship with a father, yeah. and what does a father in heaven look like? And to have that spoken over, I mean, just deeply touched my heart, deeply touched my daughter's hearts in a way that it was, there's a different, a sense of safety and a different something in their bodies as they're leaving.
Yeah.
Knowing that they're not alone, and that, you know, really, and I love how Phil says this, we're all family.
Yeah.
We're going to be together in heaven. And now
yeah.
that you've been here, we're all family. And I just, it just felt so good. Yeah. So, so good.
Yeah.
Oh, one of the things that was a highlight for me, although I'm not a woman, I was there the whole time with Phil and we had a great time. And I had the wonderful job of hosting and kind of doing this MC role. And I have to tell you, leading this many women was both entertaining for me, but also it was comical because you said it. Say your phrase. Say your phrase. You could read the back of a potato chip bag and they'd be with you.
Because they're the most loving and gracious audience you could ever ask for.
That's exactly what I experienced. It was like it didn't matter what I had said, even if I was breaking up their really intimate conversations with everybody, which I had to do multiple times. They were just all like, oh, we're so happy that you're doing that. Like, why? I feel like this is annoying to you. But it was such just a genuine group.
Yes.
And then also got the feedback. We asked everybody at the end, what do you think about doing this again? And they just screamed. And then a lot of the moms had said, what do you think about doing a fatherhood thing? And they all screamed. Like they all said, and I realized that's a really genuine response because they're volunteering to have a weekend with the kids without the dad.
Without their dad. Yes.
Like that's
true.
That's a very selfless yes, you know?
We may or may not have been brainstorming and planning that already, Brooke and I, last night and this morning. I might have already been Googling
different
if there are any bigger venues in Bend.
Me too. I was coming up blank though.
Oh, yeah. We've got a few creative ideas going.
We do. Okay. We do.
Yeah. But I just felt like there was just, you know, this hope through the room too.
Mm. Yeah.
Hope for us watching the dedication of these moms in a really scary time to be raising your kids. But I think hope for each other too. Like you said, Sally, you know, they realize they're not alone. Yeah. Even in their shared pain, I was blown away by that and how much that felt like a relief to some of the women. Oh, I have this same thing and I'm still struggling to figure it out as well. Mm-hmm. I love the way women will just step into each other's lives.
Yes.
Yeah. And bring healing. It's like you just have to give them permission and they will just mother each other in a beautiful, in the best of ways.
Mm. I saw that all week as well. And it was just such a fun group of people. Mm. And you know, so many of you ladies were not able to come. And so our hope with today was to say, let's just give you a little flavor. Okay. So everyone's in town, we're all together. Why don't we sit down? And what we did was we actually asked all the ladies in the room to send in questions. And I underestimated the amount of questions that our sisters would send. And I mean, I think I was joking with the girls and saying like, there's like a billion questions. It's not that many, but it is a lot. And what's crazy is it's not just like a phrase. It's like, it's like a paragraph or two.
That's because women speak in paragraphs.
I love it. And I need to learn this better. So thank you for teaching me. I'm humbly learning from you. So our hope is to just give you, we want to go through we have this wonderful table of you here. And I just wanted to kind of host a conversation around all these great questions. So if you're ready, we're going to get into it. Okay. You ready for the first question? It's a big one. It's deep. Where did Elizabeth get her day two outfit? Was so cute. Exclamation point. So
my power suit.
Everyone was like, I really respect you after wearing that. But I mean, it's a real question. So you do need to answer.
It's a real question. It's from Madewell. Funny story. I like saw the whole suit, thought it was great, but just did not want to spend the money. Then saw the pants go on clearance and bought them this summer, and then saw the jacket like 4 months later go on sale.
It became
like
a power suit.
I finally got the whole power
suit. It was an evolving power suit.
And it feels like pajamas. So look on Madewell's website.
I think that was part of it. All of you looked very wonderful, but that was a real question. So I figured you're just saying
so funny. It's a good start.
It's a great start. So maybe moving to a little more serious idea. This question comes in, it says, you guys have talked about optimal deprivation and on our podcast before, this idea that we need a certain level of deprivation to actually thrive in our world. There's a certain level of suffering that brings about goodness. It's part of God's plan. Mm-hmm. And it popped into my mind when Greta was talking about the power of some discomfort for our kids.
Yeah.
So this gal is asking, any tips for building resilience in kids who really hold fast to expectations and sameness?
Ooh. So I would understand that as like kids who
really like the
have
same
expectations of how things should go and like the structure and routine and order.
Yeah. And maybe give a quick little recap of your talk. Your talk was amazing. And I just maybe a little recap of that. But then I would love for you to speak to this if you can, Greta.
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all around the world that give monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just to a few dollars a month? Thank you so much, and may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. And if you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
Sure. I talked about the connecting power of adventure and why adventures are such a great tool to cultivate connection. And one of the things that I mentioned is that adventures allow for discomfort, because in our modern day world, many of our children don't experience a lot of discomfort. Our lives are generally pretty comfortable. Mm-hmm. But discomfort is often where we grow the most. And I love the opportunity to help my kids grow through discomfort, because it's actually hard for me as well. Mm-hmm. And so what I found is that when we experience discomfort together, not only does it allow us to grow as individuals, but it also pushes us together. Mm-hmm. So it allows us to grow together. And it's hard, especially mm-hmm. for those kids. And I am one of those people who has high expectations, and I love when things go as planned and just right, and nobody has a bad attitude. In fact, I didn't get to tell this story in my talk, but I'm famous in our family for using the phrase, "You're sucking the joy out of this moment." I said that to a child once, and I will never live it down for the rest of my life. I don't like it when the joy is sucked out of the moment. I want it to be joyful all the time. But in those uncomfortable moments, sure. We do grow, and it's mm-hmm. hard, but how wonderful to teach. To take those moments to teach yeah. our kids to be flexible. Yeah. And it can be in just the simplest things. Mm-hmm. Like you go for, you don't have to start with like, we're going to go on a 5-day camping trip. Cause that could be setting yourself up for way too much discomfort. It could just be, we're going to go for, a 30-mile hike around the park nearby. Mm-hmm. And, somebody forgets to pack a snack, or they're wearing shoes that are uncomfortable, and working through that together. Mm-hmm. It's okay to hike without your shoes. Let's see how that feels.
That's great. That's
for some idea. For some people, that could be really hard, but it could be an opportunity to decide which is better, what's more comfortable, shoes or no shoes. It's a great way to experience that with yeah. your kids. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I have experienced with some of my kids.
Yeah. That quick story though you told about one of your kids, I won't name him, but one of your kids about what he had said, you know, he's just having a hard time getting up the mountain and you were helping yeah. him destroy. Do you mind just sharing that story real quick? Because I think that really Thanks. Speaks to me. That was like the story that came into mind of like, yeah. kind of, do you mind sharing that real quick?
No, not at all. I'd love to. Yeah. So we're hiking up a big steep hill, and it's hot, and we're all uncomfortable. And the part of me that was struggling and uncomfortable wanted to say things that were harsh, like littler kids than you are doing this hike, and be a man, even though he was young and not anywhere near being a man. But instead, I was able to, you know, invite the Holy Spirit to help me be kind and compassionate, and to walk next to him, hold his hand, sing songs, give gum, hold his backpack for a while.
Ooh, fun. It's okay. We have a little phone. Yes. Keep going.
Drink water, all the things that could get us to the top of the hill, and promise him I would be with him through it all. Shared that in that moment when I looked him in the eyes and said, I know this is hard. I know you don't want to do this, but I will be with you. It wasn't like he squared his shoulders and said, thank you, mother. I'm inspired. I will rise to the occasion. He was still grumpy yeah. the whole way up the hill. But when we got to the top, I celebrated with him, and he said, the Lord gives the weary strength. And I love that moment because it reminded me that he was experiencing a connection with me in the hard times, and he was experiencing connection with Jesus in the hard times, yeah. that yeah. the Lord was there. And so I see the discomfort as a way to remind them that I am with them in these little trials now. God is with them in the little trials now, so that when they grow up and they are walking through greater trials, I will be there then, and God will be there then.
That's beautiful.
I love that, Greta. I love that you stayed with them on the hike, and mm-hmm. that you were doing everything you could to, you know, distract them, even the little things like the gum and stuff like that. I just feel like that is... what a gift for him to have that, to have you right beside him, not annoyed with him, not pushing him, poking him. Come on, hurry up. But just kind of suffering with him.
Yeah, I love that. Suffering with him. Yeah. Yes. Good.
And of course, he made your suffering worse because you're carrying his grumbling with you. But I love it. And I love that you said that the Holy Spirit gave you that wisdom at the moment. Mm-hmm. I think we can always, if we lean in and listen, stop ourselves and listen for a moment, the Holy Spirit will give us that kind of guidance that we need.
Mm. Yeah. And I'm sorry, I'm going to add one more thing.
No apologizing. You just keep going.
one thing that I've really recognized in parenting my kids is the element of compassion.
Yeah.
I talked about this in my book. When the temptation is to your kid ask for help in a hard moment. So practical, your kid's like, can you carry my backpack? It's too heavy. And you might think, well, you need to toughen up. You need to carry your own backpack. But I've thought, what if I asked my husband, Aaron, when I'm walking up a hill and I'm struggling, I'm like, babe, I'm so tired. Can you just carry my backpack for 5 minutes? And he was like, you need to toughen up. Mm. Be a woman.
That's such a good
be
point.
Strong. I would be crushed.
Yeah. You'd be like, why are you being so rude?
Right. Why are you yeah. being so mean to me?
Yeah.
And so I would want him to treat my moment of weakness with compassion. Yeah. Even if I could do it, the compassion would minister to my heart. And so I always try to remember I can be compassionate in those hard moments with my kids mm. when it is uncomfortable. I can still help them grow, but I can do it in a way that is compassionate. Mm. And I've always found that that touches their hearts mm-hmm. a lot.
I think it's such, I love so much the way you did that, but I think it's so hard for us to ask for help.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And for our kids to be able to identify, this is what yeah. I need, mm-hmm. and will you help me? For us to be able to get down on their level mm-hmm. and see him face to face, look him in the eye, and be with him in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He didn't have to do it on his own. He did it.
Yeah.
But you helped him, and he did it. He found resiliency on the inside of him because he had somebody that was willing to walk with him. Mm-hmm. So beautiful. So powerful.
Yeah.
So powerful.
And there is, we don't have Phil with us right now because yes. he's actually watching.
He's watching the girls, mm-hmm. Birdie and Sloan.
And
yes.
so I'm going to try and step in a little bit into his space. Did you hear my pages flipping on the Bible like Phil always has, but Galatians 6, 2. Mm-hmm. This is the family of God is supposed to do this.
Yes.
Carry each other's burdens. Mm-hmm. And in this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ. And what is the law of Christ? It's the law of love.
Right.
Mm. It's not the law of good behavior.
Right.
Or even good attitudes. It's the law of love. And I just love that you actually, I can imagine someday him reading through this in the middle of Galatians, tough time in his life, and your son remembering how you actually showed him how to do that. Mm. You carried his actual burden.
Yeah.
Up that hill. I think that's beautiful. That's incarnating the love of Christ, like flesh and blood. This is how Jesus loves.
Mm-hmm. And that's what motherhood is a lot of, isn't yes. it? Mm-hmm. So much of that carrying mm-hmm. our kids' burdens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Yeah. And that Sally, I know you like to say, you're never done being a mother. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a question that kind of actually really goes with this, but I'm going to mention the question just because I think in one way we're also answering it, which is when it comes to saying no to your kids, how do we gracefully decline without sounding dismissive or uncaring? And yeah. the law of love, right? Like I hear yeah. you saying a lot of that stuff, even in the story you were saying of with your husband, if he had said, toughen up, just, you know, like being loving and gracious. Like, how do you say no? I think it's being kind mm-hmm. and gracious mm-hmm. is what I hear you all saying, mm-hmm. which I think is a big part
and
of
then
it.
I think even gracious when their response to the no is not gracious. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. when we say no and they have a poor response, what is so often our like quick reaction is to rebuke the poor response. Mm-hmm. And then Sally, you've helped me so much to pause and see the kid in front of me, not just the behavior in front of me, and be able to say, man, I see you're really disappointed with the fact that I said, no, you cannot have ice cream at 8 a.m. or, you know, the older kids, I see you're really disappointed that I said, no, you can't go to that thing with the friend.
You could say yes to ice cream in the morning if you grew up as I did.
That's true.
My parents put vanilla ice cream in oatmeal. And if you think it's disgusting,
I bet it's
amazing. Delicious.
It was.
It's almost like having an apple crisp without the apple.
I was going to say it sounds like cobbler.
Yeah,
that's it. I'm picking up ice cream today.
So good.
But it's next level. But at 8 a.m, I just It's not the great strong start of the day that you'd hope for.
Well, some people have donuts. Well,
that and Wonder Bread.
It's kind of the same thing.
I mean, muffins, cake, same thing, just no frosting.
We're derailing fast.
No. This is real talk. You know, this is the stuff of life.
Yeah, but I think just the graciously seeing the kid and addressing the behavior later when they're calm. You know, Sally's got something to say about this.
Well, and this is going into the next kind of question. So I would love for you to answer or speak into that, Sally.
I feel like I just had an encounter with one of my grown children where the answer was no, but I wasn't great at being with them and the why it was so important for them. Mm-hmm. And I think especially as they get older, and it felt kind of risky to me. It didn't feel safe. But being able to say, I understand why you really want to do this. I understand why this is so important for you. I understand that this means a lot to you, but I'm still the one that has to keep you safe. And there's dangers here that are beyond what I think you get in this moment. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I'm saying no, but what else could we do?
Cool. We have a motorcycle that lives by our house who thinks he's amazing and likes to do that five times a day.
And we just heard it.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter it doesn't matter how quiet we try to make our space. Yeah. Anyway, motorcycles are real. Keep going, Sally.
Yes.
So I think just being able to acknowledge what's going on inside of them, you know, that there is a desire, there is something going on.
Yeah.
So that they know that we haven't missed that piece. Because that was the thing that came kind of back at me was that I just needed to be with me, and I missed it by telling her all the reasons why she couldn't do what she was wanting to do.
Yeah,
and I mean, it used to be I was very legalistic, you know, give me a chapter and verse. Mm-hmm. Why you think this is okay? Mm-hmm. And that did not bode well at
that
all.
Will
for
not
me.
Enhance the love of the words for kids.
No.
That's so, like me giving Elizabeth, Phil and I giving Elizabeth a Bible verse over a character's issue we wanted to see change in her. That is not going to enhance her love for the word of God, is it? Right? Sure. Oh, gosh. Mm. The parenting flops.
Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely. We could write a book on flops.
We could write several books on those. But I think
here's the thing, though, when you're talking... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're
was
fine.
I interrupting
no,
you?
Go ahead. Oh,
when you're talking about being able to say no with that kind of grace and understanding and with them in the know, you have to slow your life down. I can't do that in a hurry when I have a bazillion things going through my head and I'm barely having time to keep my head above water. And people go at different paces. You know, I definitely recognize my pace is slower. But everybody has a threshold where they're just not going to be able to be considerate when they're going at that kind of speed. And I think if we cannot emphasize enough to each other, and that's what it needs to be. We need to be talking to about each other about slowing down at a pace that I can be this kind person.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so important. It's really kind of simple and so hard to do.
Yeah.
Well, and this kind of leads to a question. It's a simple one, but it's in that same phrase of connecting with kids. And this mom asked a really interesting, I think interesting from her perspective question. Simple question, big answer. How do we connect emotionally with our boys? So I think that's a really good one, and I think we're a little bit on that topic, and so I'd like to kind of start going to that place. Like, how do we connect with, if you're a mom listening, how do you connect with your boys? I mean, this is for fathers and mothers, but how do you connect with your boys emotionally? So Sally, you want to start? Or if you want to break, we could riff on some other stuff, but I think you'll have a lot to say about this.
I feel like my clinical hat, I have a lot to say, but I think I have to be really honest in my personal world too. And that my son was very compliant. I think he saw that there were seasons in our life that things were hard. And so he just wanted to make things easier for me. And in that, I missed him. I missed him a lot, you know, emotionally. And so I think for me, boy, girl, whatever, the kids that are compliant, the kids that kind of always go along, the kids that always get the great grades, that if you say, here's the bar and they meet it, there's stuff going on that you might be missing. So the intentionality of, you know, face-to-face eye contact, how are you? Mm-hmm. I'm just noticing what's going on. And we've had some conversations that I just, you know, I wish I could go back and just at times hold him and soothe him.
Yeah.
And the reality is we can have those repairs. We can have this conversation, but his nervous system knew ongoing that disconnect. Mm-hmm. And so now as an adult, he's kind of working that piece through in a way that we're still learning how to connect. So I feel like, Greta, you probably have, because you've got boys and you do lots of connecting with them, that you might have some great things to share.
Yeah, Greta, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know if I necessarily have any like specific things. It's really just more about being available a lot. And that goes has to do with what you said about slowing down and making the most of like little opportunities. So I'm going to go to the grocery store. I will pick a kid to go with me. Mm-hmm. And not just my daughter, who's more likely to say yes, because she's the wisest one of the group who knows I'll probably get a treat. The boys didn't always clue into that, but to just invite again and again. And I kind of try to remind myself to invite them into connection. And so the times when I really would rather be by myself, to invite them in. So come in my room and hang out at when I really want to go to bed and let's talk. I know the book that you love, I'll read it with you. Or this is a book that I think you would love. Why don't you listen to it on Audible? And I have some dyslexic kids, so that's the way that they read books. Let's talk about it when you're done or listening to it. So just finding as many ways, points of connection, and then inviting them into that. And not being hurt if there's pushback. So if they're like, that book sounds dumb, it's like, okay, well, here's another one. And not taking it personally. I don't feel like going to the store with you right now. But I find the more I invite, sometimes they'll say yes. And sometimes they'll say yes more and more.
What comes to my mind, I love that, is I have, you know, we have only have one boy, but he's more introverted. And so he doesn't want to talk all the time and talk about his feelings very often. But so with him, I have to look for the moment. And I have to back off when it's not the right moment, even though it's a good moment for me. And it's not a moment that he wants to go there. I have to let him lead sometimes. But I also love what you're saying, because I think I also need to be more intentional with like trying to create some of the moments. But for him, it's very clear when he wants to talk and when he doesn't want to talk. And he either wants to talk a lot or he wants to talk not at all. And so I think for me, it's again that slowing down, so that when the moments come, I'm actually ready for them. And we can so easily get in the pattern of we're just talking business. Especially because he's homeschooled, it's just I'm coming into your room and I'm checking to make sure you're doing all your work, and I'm irritated with you that you missed this and this, you know. And I'll realize in the moment, no, I just need to like sit and talk to him. But I think with boys, if we can start when they're little and they want to talk about their Legos or their Matchbox cars or whatever thing Pokemon. They're really interested, if we are willing to sit, even though it's just painful sometimes to hear them chatter and chatter and chatter about their toys, I think we're starting a relational culture where when there's stuff they really actually need to talk about, they know that we'll stop and listen. And so even with our 14-year-old, it's a lot of like hearing about guitar and all the different guitars and why he likes the one we got him for Christmas and all the other guitar puzzles that he needs. And like taking those moments
he doesn't
to just
need them,
say,
by the way. He just needs. He's like, Dad, I really can't play guitar without this. I was like, that's $300. And he's like, well, I'm saving for snowboarding. Like, then I guess you're not going to get the pedal. Like, anyway, sorry.
Yep,
that was a
that's
tangent,
very
that's
true.
Real. Yeah.
Lots
that's
of conversations real. Like that. And then he has told me multiple times when I'm like trying to tell him something or talk to him about something, he'll say, you're using too many words. Like, he wants it to be shorter. Or like the other day, he was kind of getting in trouble for something. And I was having to correct him. And afterwards, I walked away feeling like, I think I didn't handle that well. I think he felt shame. And that wasn't my intention. But I was just second guessing how I handled it. So I went back to him and I said, hey, buddy, when I was talking to you about that, did you feel shame? Like, that was not my intention at all. I just feel like I didn't handle that well. What did that make you feel? And he like stopped for a minute. He's very logical. And he just like thought about it and he goes, no, you were totally right. You just used way too many words. Awesome. I was like, okay. Yeah. Thank
like
you for that
sounds
feedback.
Sounds like David a little bit. David.
Yeah. Very honest.
Thank you for that feedback. That. I will use less words. So I think especially if a mom's more emotional, we want this long, deep conversation. But sometimes it's like two sentences. They told us how they felt about something. They gave us a hug and they went up to their room and that feels connecting to them.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I like that when you're talking about when they're little, you know, they want to talk about their toys and their interests. Mm-hmm. But I think as they get older too, I'm noticing that connecting with my grandsons now means diving into a world I know nothing about and letting them be the expert and tell me all about how you produce music or how Moses's art works in this way. Or I've heard long explanations from Duke about all the equipment you need to go snowboarding and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like they feel like they're really sharing their heart with you because you are actually being interested in what interests them. And I think I'm doing a better job of that now as a grandmother than I did as a young mom by far. Mm-hmm. But it's actually really fun because there's so many interesting things that they're interested about. And if you just keep being curious, you can get kids talk. Non-talkative kids like Duke can really go for a long time, which is fun.
Yeah.
And at least it feels like you're really connecting on an emotional level because they're passionate about Duke's passionate about things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Are you showing them that you care about them by being interested in what is interesting to them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can even do it over text. Jude and I had a long text stream because he was talking about this thing, I said, well, what's your favorite instrument right now? And he went into this long explanation where you don't have to use an instrument. And you're producing instead, kind of thing.
Producing
I still thoroughly
without any
understand
practice,
it, but it was a long explanation back and forth for a good hour. And it was really kind of fascinating.
Classic Jude. Like, that's a classic Jude thing. I'm just going to be a producer. I was like, but you still got to learn music.
He's done years of music.
Kind of. I love that boy so much. That said, there's a question I want to ask you guys that wasn't actually texted in. It's my question to you because it's my own curiosity. Can I do this? I know
we're excited.
I have a microphone, so that's all I've got. It's the only thing I have. But I wanted to ask each of you to just share. I mean, there's multiple, so obviously I know that. But I'd love to hear from each of you what was something you took away from the retreat. Mm-hmm. And it was probably from another person at the table. So I'd love to hear like, hey, when you said this or this was something I just took away from the retreat. So would you be able to give me... And whoever has the first one can go because I don't have one. I have lots of them, but I'll let Sally's got it. Let's have Sally go first. We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
So I think the first one, and for me, this was kind of a new like, I've not done this before. So like as a speaker, can you like just sit and partake and do you do the things, the activities? So when the teaching was on guilt and shame and we had that time to be together confessionally, I had such a sweet moment with Greta that it was just, I'm taking that in my heart. I'm just so grateful for that moment that we had together. And then the lament was such a sweet time for me with the Lord, just some things that I have been lamenting, but it felt like there was just this sweetness in the room of lament together, that it was just so safe and so free and so I don't know that comfortable is the right word, but maybe manageable, that's not the right word either, but it just
like
felt
you could hold it
so free, you know. It felt contained. That's what I'm looking for. It felt contained. That there was space for it, but that it was contained and that we could be together. And I think there's something about witnessing one another's stories. And even though we didn't really necessarily talk about what we were lamenting, but you could feel it in the room.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just got to this place that it was like, I was sitting with my dear sweet mama I choose, who was on the prayer wall with everyone, Judy Renner, and my daughters were there, and my newest little grandson, and I just went up and kissed my girls on the cheek and grabbed my sweet little boy and just let him lay on my chest, and it was just amazing. Mm. Amazing. So I'm just grateful that I got to participate.
I looked over, I think, during that time, and you, it's so funny because I know you, Sally and Greta, you just met this week. And obviously known of each other, but then met officially. And I look over and both of you are just crying and hugging. And I was like, I love it. And my heart was like, I knew it. Yeah. I just knew it. It was just such a sweet moment too. Cause good people like know good people. So I loved that.
I love that. Yeah. I feel like to what you said about, like, I don't know how you phrased it, something about holding each other's stories or just, I feel like I was surprised by how many women I got to talk to whose kids have similar disabilities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like something that's been a huge lack in my life the last 7 years, and in part because I didn't pursue it because her diagnosis was just odd and rare, and we didn't know where she'd fall on the spectrum they gave us. And so I didn't quite know if I wanted to dive all the way in the disability community, but it was kind of, anyway. So I've never felt like I've had a community of moms around me who understand, not just understand, I've had amazing moms around me, but moms who also have the unique challenges. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, once you've walked through something, you just get each other and you know each other's loads. And so I had so many conversations that weren't happening in the sessions, but that were happening as a result of the sessions, of women just sharing their stories with me, but me feeling not alone, of feeling like, oh, you just said three of the diagnoses that Birdie has, or you know, or hearing their, like today, being with some of the women today, and there was one woman I was with who felt like I was in her exact same stage when I was pregnant with Sloan. She just found out she's pregnant with her fourth, wasn't planning on having a fourth. Their oldest has really similar challenges to Birdie, and she's like really overwhelmed, like feels like, yes, I'm excited about this, and also how in the world am I going to do this? And so I just kept having these moments of getting to hear the women's stories that were so much like mine. And I felt not alone. I felt like there are other women around me who know exactly what this is like. So that was just a gift to me. I was so thankful for the women being willing to share their stories. But it made me feel not alone.
Well, I think my biggest moment was all through Gretchen's talk, because she made me just laugh hilariously. I mean, I just am not funny. I hardly ever laugh at
you
jokes.
You're actually funny, but you don't mean to be. So you're actually funny.
So here's the thing. People are laughing. People only laugh at me.
laugh at me too.
They laugh with you.
But not because you are being funny, but because your take on life is so delightful and so much joy that you turn what could be a mom rant into this joyful, isn't this hilarious kind of a moment. I love that. But then I also, because I've been trying to figure out how do I stay connected to my three older grandchildren who've now moved 1,000 miles away. When they were 15 minutes away, I felt so connected because it was running to pick them up from school and then hearing all about this, you know, mean kid on the playground. I mean, so I felt so connected, and I have not felt connected. And as soon as you started talking about using adventure for connection, and I love to do fun things and adventure, and so I just, to me, that was big light bulb moment. I felt like God was answering what has been a prayer that I hadn't said out loud, of Lord, would you show me really how am I going to do this? Felt like this whole year with them gone, I've done a terrible job of it because I don't know what to do with them. And I feel like, Sally, your adventuring is exactly
Greta. Greta. It's okay.
Sorry about
that. We're all very tired.
I know.
So tired.
I know what you meant.
I'm looking at Greta saying, Sally. I'm sure the combination of Greta and Sally together is like,
we would be we're a dynamic duo.
Yeah, you are.
The yin and the yang. I love that.
So thank you for that, for the work you've done.
Thank you. And I actually would say, everyone's talk resonated with me, but mm-hmm. your talk mm-hmm. specifically, when you were talking about biblical womanhood mm-hmm. and who we are, that we are the helper, the easer. Yeah. But you spoke, it's going to make me, I'm going to try not to cry.
Safe space. We cry a lot on this podcast.
We cried all week and I think I had tears left, yeah. but here they are. You spoke about being on the one hand, a comforter and this gentle helper, but on the other side, also being a warrior. And I felt like it was a message specifically for me, because for my whole life, I have always struggled with thinking that my role, I was supposed to be the girl with the gentle and quiet spirit. Mm. And that was never me. Yeah. I was never quiet. I didn't want to be. I wanted to be out there running around with the boys. I wanted to be on the stage being a preacher. I wanted to be yes. The warrior. But I also love being the gentle comforter. Mm-hmm. But I didn't value the one, and I thought I was only supposed to be the yeah. other. And to hear you say that I can be both of those, and that is who yes. God made me to be, mm. felt like this burden was lifted from my shoulders, but also like a freedom to step into that and be like, yes, yes. that's who God made me to be. And yes. that is who I have wanted to be yes. my whole life.
Yeah.
And it was so freeing. And I know that I'm not the only one who felt that way.
I'm so glad.
Thank you. Yeah. Sorry, I'm weeping the tears, guys.
We think a quiet spirit is somebody who doesn't talk very much.
Yes.
And I think that is one of the most unfortunate messages of the church in general. I don't know that anybody's ever preached that message, but somehow it pervaded our thinking to the point where I thought I was that person. In reality, I was hiding and I was passive and I was not connecting with people, because you can stay quiet. Even Proverbs, one of those Proverbs that's so funny, is so great. One of my favorites. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise, you know. But for me to realize passivity is going against my God-given image of an easer by just not getting involved. So it goes on both sides. You know, for me, it's this stirring up to shed passivity and to step into my role as a warrior for my family. And that actually a quiet spirit is, you can be super happy and talkative and loud and have a very quiet spirit where you're not agitated and trying to control everybody around you. And
And that's, I loved how you
further.
Yeah. Talk. How you talked about what a quiet spirit actually, it's not that idea of you're just in the corner, you know, not making waves, but instead it's just there's peace. You're spreading peace. And even if you're a warrior, you can still spread or bring peace. And it just it was so good. And so I loved
what
it.
I have to say, although I'm not a lady, I had a favorite moment or two. Am I okay to share really quick?
Is that okay?
I just want permission from the ladies at the table. As a husband there, I was so proud and also so amazed at so many women that would take the time and the energy and the money. I mean, it wasn't a hard sell to be like, get away from all of your stresses and come hang out with us for a couple of days. Meaning, of course, like
your stresses being the names of their children.
Yeah, the stresses being just life, you know, when you're in your home. Like, I remember when Elizabeth said, like, I'd like to vacation, but not at home, because if I'm at home, everything's on my mind. And I can totally relate with that. Like, it's a whole different experience when you're in your normal day to day. But I couldn't believe that. And then I was also really proud of all the husbands. You know, there was, we get to see, like, you know, there were so many husbands that actually surprised their wives and bought tickets. And and how we know that is because all of these husbands kept like signing up for their wives using their names. And I was like, who are all these dudes signing up for this retreat? Don't we know that this is a motherhood retreat? And then finding out that these husbands were doing that. So I was really proud of the dads. A mom said, she said, you should have like a little tagline that says intentional motherhood brought to you by fathers everywhere.
That's great.
All the dads were like at home in it.
Yes.
And then one, I was talking to one, I mean, we talked to so many wonderful, sweet, sweet ladies, but one of the gals was saying that she was really that everyone was healthy and fine, but her husband did say, hey, can I have some help resetting the house when you get home? And she's like, oh, I know what this means. Like, resetting the house, like it was that bad. So to all you moms that made the time and effort, yeah. Thank you. But also, I was just really, I couldn't believe how many good families and people that are wanting to be intentional. I was just really blessed by that. Yeah. The content was incredible. And if any of the stuff that we're talking about over, you know, right now as you're hearing it encourages you, I think that's a good reason to come next year because we have a lot more stuff. We can't go into detail with all the teachings, obviously, but it was so rich. That's the word. It was rich and powerful and lots of tears, man. Mm-hmm. Lots of tears. Also, probably one of the best groups, like we talked about, one of the best groups to lead. Everyone was just so kind and so sweet. So, and you ladies, every single one of you poured out your life and your soul and the richness has just been really beautiful. So a few more questions. Are you still available for a few more? Mm-hmm. So this is a little bit of a turn, but coming to all of you women, when it comes to parents or relationships with your parents, so adult children to their parents, how do we manage relationships with our own parents when it almost feels as though we've become more mature than them? Mm. And in parentheses, sadly, you know, like this is not like a proud thing, but sadly, you know, what do we do? How do we manage that relationship when we feel like we've become more mature than them?
It's that whole idea of parenting your own parents.
Yeah, it's not how it's supposed to be. No. Not how it's supposed to be.
It's not how it's supposed to be, but I'm going to turn this around a little bit. Can I turn the question around just a little bit?
Absolutely.
There is a point, I think, in your growth where... I'm going to say exactly, especially in our family. Okay. So with me and with Elizabeth and with Brooke and with Phil, we know a certain amount and we can bring you a certain far along. Mm-hmm. But then as the next generation kind of takes our place in the cultural moment of the world, mm-hmm. when the younger generation is willing to very kindly and patiently and with compassion bring their parents along, mm-hmm. there is something really beautiful about mm-hmm. that. Without a ton of shame, realizing that we did well in our cultural moment, but we need catching up because we're not aware that what worked well in our cultural moment isn't working well in yours. Mm. And I feel like my kids have been particularly skillful in bringing us along without shaming us. It's still embarrassing sometimes to realize that I said something that would be interpreted in a different way by your generation. So, but that's on me. You always say it so well. So I think there is something to, there is a time when your generation has a certain different kind of maturity that you need to be giving into the older generation in real honesty.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the cycle of life. And I think if the older parents will stay open and if the younger parents will be gentle in the way they go about it, it could be so powerful for the kids being raised.
Sure. I really like that angle. I like how you switched that up. And then at the same time, I can relate with the fact that there's that awkwardness that, so you guys actually have, you and Phil as an example, and I know because we do this, you guys have a gracious response, but a lot of the times that is not the case.
Yeah.
So maybe let's take, so that's one angle, and I think that's you're right. Angle. That's, and I think you're right. The honoring piece is huge, but maybe if the parents aren't emotionally able to do that, maybe some of that stuff.
So what then?
Can you read the question again? I want to make sure I'm hearing the words.
How do we manage relationships with our own parents when it almost feels as though we have become more mature, sadly, than them?
So I think what's coming to mind for me is there's disappointment. And so I think being okay that to be disappointed and just be with Jesus and being disappointed that there are things that that it sounds like they're really wanting from their parents that their parents aren't able to give. And I think that's okay. I think that's okay. But I think doing that and even in like in a lament way frees us up to then have compassion.
Yeah.
Because there are reasons why we only go so far in things. because we all have wounds mm-hmm. and we all have parts of us that protect those wounds. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm thinking that, you know, for the parents, there's some wounds that maybe have never been addressed that are keeping them in kind of a protective posture that's sort of stunted. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do you have grace and compassion for that? You know, and I think a piece of it is letting God meet those needs maybe in a different way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think what's coming to mind for me thinking of that is, you know, I've been so blessed to have a woman who was a mentor, originally was a mentor for me, who has really become a spiritual mama for me. And in so many ways, I've had corrective experiences with her that have freed me to see my own parents mm-hmm. with a different mm-hmm. set of eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think, you know, part of it is just, it's okay to be honest. And for this person to just, mm-hmm. they're being mm-hmm. honest that there's yeah. some disappointment
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
I don't know if thoughts.
I agree with everything mm-hmm. you said. Mm-hmm. I think that yeah, you can't, I think unless you acknowledge the disappointment, then you can't accept where your parents actually are or even attempt to see context. You know, I think mm-hmm. I in some ways feel for my parents' generation in how vastly the world has changed, especially when it comes to self-awareness and emotional health and mm-hmm. the resources that we have available to us, even if you never make it into a therapist office mm-hmm. and how if you can consider the fact that mom, you and dad, that was like not even a conversation for most of your life uh-huh. until now, all of a sudden it's everything. Uh-huh. And so I think we just have to, and this is, I'm speaking of like well-meaning, good intended,
yeah.
not in the case where there's like major abuse that's never been acknowledged. Yeah. You know, that's a whole yeah. other category.
Yeah.
But maybe parents who are just unaware, and that's
yeah.
that's sad. And but I also think to your point, Mom, if it is what I just mentioned, well-meaning,
yeah.
Well-intended parents, I think that sometimes there's a disconnect between the adult children. So my generation, I guess you could say, oftentimes have all these disappointments, but they've never attempted to bridge the gap. Mm. They've never attempted to talk to their parents about it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes because they don't want to offend, or sometimes because we just assume they're not going to get it.
Yeah.
And so I want to be careful how I say this, because I don't think in every case you can just openly talk about it and address uh-huh. it. Sometimes that yeah. will go horribly.
Yeah.
But I think if you have some sort of open relationship, it's worth a shot to say, yeah. hey, mom, I know that the world has changed so much and it's like hard to keep up, and that now we talk so much about all of these things, but this has like been so helpful to me. And I've just read this book and it's been incredibly helpful. I just wonder if maybe you would read it
yeah.
so that we yeah. can talk about it together. Uh-huh. I think that's worth a try.
That's
knowing that you
kindness.
Have to go into that recognizing they might never read
yeah.
it. They might not yeah. want, or they might read it and ridicule it. Like mm-hmm. you have to know that that could be the outcome, but
yeah.
I think it's worth the risk.
Yeah.
Because I think in a lot of cases, the older generation just doesn't know what to do. But the minute you invite them, they often want to respond. And now yeah. that's not across the board. It's not in every case.
Yeah.
But I think don't miss at least extending the invitation yeah. once or twice to see yeah. if it's something that they could respond to.
Yeah, I agree.
Because
I
you could miss that. Out on something that's possible.
Yeah.
And then it's a whole other conversation for when they are completely resistant and there's mm-hmm. hurt that they won't acknowledge. And mm-hmm. that's a whole other,
yeah,
that's a whole other thing. But yeah. I think if you're talking of the well-meaning parents yeah. who just are unaware,
yeah,
like you said, we can help
yeah.
bring them along.
And I love your idea of, well, of course, you know, me and books, but
yeah.
your idea of sharing books. But now there's also, you know, Audible and listening to yeah. books and
yeah.
ways like that. I think you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And I think there's been a lot of blame from a younger generation to an older generation. Mm-hmm. So the first you have to establish, I'm not blaming you, mm-hmm. But come along with me. I'm learning mm-hmm. this stuff
yeah.
and mm-hmm. let's learn yeah. it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's let's talk about it and make sense. And Sally, I love your word disappointment. I think
yeah.
that's
yeah.
really key, because disappointment is not going to kill our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Disappointment is just, you know, disappointment.
But I think it's sometimes when we haven't acknowledged the disappointment mm-hmm. that we blame. We're just angry. Yes. We're just, yes. But really we're just sad.
Yeah.
We're just like, yeah. Wish it was different.
Yeah. Yeah. Easier, better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think just acknowledging, I have to put my little therapist hat on just for a second.
Yeah, go for it.
It can be a big hat too. Yeah. Big therapist hat if you want.
Anger is very protective.
Yeah.
And it's generally, I use this little picture of an iceberg. Mm-hmm. With the anger on top, and there's the water, and then all the
I remember because Scarlett brought it home. It hung on our fridge for a very long time. Yeah.
I've memorized that.
Yeah. That when anger comes, there's always something underneath it. And having the courage and curiosity within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if we feel safe enough with Jesus, sometimes we don't feel safe enough with Jesus, feel safe enough with a friend. It's just like, I am struggling so much with being angry about something to just kind of explore what's going on underneath.
Yes.
If we're stuck in the register of anger, the only emotion we can't turn off, we can be numb, turn everything off. The only one we can't is anger.
Really?
Because it's part of the survival, fight, flight, or freeze.
Yeah.
Wow.
So if we've had a lot of hurt.
Yeah.
A lot of hurt, we can get very stuck in anger because it feels very, very protective.
Yes.
It keeps everybody away. But then it even makes it worse because we're more isolated.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a piece to kind of keep in mind. Mm-hmm.
So good to know. It's the one emotion we can't turn off is anger.
Wow.
That's so interesting. Oh, that makes me want to think of big things.
Yeah, I would like to agree. Okay. She is very good. I'm
very good at that.
One thing that I've tried to do in this arena is also, and somebody mentioned it in the talks this weekend, but I can't remember who at the moment, but also to recognize that our parents were doing the best they could with what they have.
It was Sally.
Sally, thank you. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, that's not true in every case, but for a lot of cases, those, like you are saying, Elizabeth, those well-intentioned parents, they were doing the best they could with what they had. And I think about my parents, like when I talk about creating a healthy sexual culture in our home, and I'm doing it, my husband and I are doing it quite differently than the way our parents did, but they were doing the best they could with what they had. Mm-hmm. They were new Christians. And they were in a time when nobody was really talking about it. So they didn't know how to, they didn't have tools, and, they did their best. So I don't blame them, but I do say, okay, well, here are some things that I want to do differently. Mm-hmm. And I also am praying that my children will look back at the ways I messed up and say, Mom and Dad were doing the best they could.
Yes.
Because I am 100% sure there are things that I've done and I'm doing wrong.
Yes.
And I've even spoken to them. Like, we've talked about things like, hey, you know what? I probably did this wrong. Yeah. And but I did the best that I could with what I knew then.
Yeah.
And now I'm apologizing for it. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be other things that this will happen again.
Mm-hmm. And you give them a chance to say, I think it's really important, especially in the young adult years where they still have all sorts of strong feelings about everything. And that's physiological. Mm-hmm. They do have strong feelings about everything. Give them a chance to say it. I feel like a lot is accomplished just by letting them say that and even inviting them to say it. And they will, I guarantee you, only the most mature kids, and none of mine, would say it really nicely and diplomatically with no shame. So I hope that as a parent, I'm just able to take it, you know, and just say with all the emotion and all the heat, to be, and that is not a strong point for me, partly because of a lot of damage done, but that's what I want to be, aspire to be. And just keeping that in my mind so that when one of my adult kids hits me with it,
not physically,
say,
not physically hits
not
you.
Physically, not physically, not words, just, you know,
tells
just
you.
Says unvarnished, know, unedited, just says what they actually feel and what they actually mean.
Sure.
I want to be that mom who's able to just track with them. And I'm probably not going to have all the beautiful language of around it, but at least if they can walk away from me saying, oh, I heard that. Mom got it. Mm-hmm. She got it. Yes. She recognized it. She saw it. She didn't make a bunch of excuses, even though you always have a lot of excuses and they'll run through your mind a lot faster. Mm-hmm. They're like your defense, you know, but you have no idea how scary you were to raise at that stage or whatever. Sure. It's just not a good idea. Not a good idea. Yeah. Just to take it, because what is Ronald Rolhasser uses the idea of absorbing somebody's pain. Mm-hmm. And that there is just a beauty and a grace if we can be mature enough to absorb somebody else's pain that is directed at us.
Yeah.
Sometimes that right there is enough.
Yeah. One of the
Sally, I'm sure you probably have words for this that I'm only just sensing.
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, last thing I want to do, because this is such a, like, this is such a good part of the conversation, but I know this question will go on for another 10 minutes, but I want to, but here's what I want to do, because this is kind of like the motherhood podcast right now, which I love. So I still don't know why I want it. But I do.
You're supporting us.
That's what it is. Thank you. I'm supporting you. And I do support all of you and believe in all of you. And you all did an incredible job. That's my humble opinion. But I did want to just ask, just as we're closing today, could you just deposit into the moms listening, to the fathers listening, the one thing that you would just want to leave with the mothers, right? Like there's one thing you could say. And the hope with this is, I mean, obviously if it needs to be long, then it's okay. But if it's like, you know, maybe even just a minute or two, if you were like to kind of boil down, hey, this is a really essential thing that I've learned in motherhood that I really hold dear. And I wish I could have told my younger self, or I wish I could have known as I was raising my kids. Would you just all just take a minute, each of you? I'd love to just hear that from each of you as we close. If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers. Sally's ready.
I brought my printout of what I shared. So yes. The quote I'm thinking of is right here.
You found it.
I don't even have to try to think
of
it.
Ooh, I know what you're going to quote.
Oh, that'd be great if you actually
know. So Maya Angelou says, I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel.
Yes. Mm.
And for That's me, beautiful. That embodies the idea of slowing down. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea that the days are long, but the years are short. I spent a lot of time when my kids were young, like, what am I going to be when I grow up and what am I going to do? And mm-hmm. they're leaving. And I just wish I hadn't been so worried about that. Mm-hmm. It came. I mean, it came late. Mm-hmm. I was 48 before I got the courage to go back and do my undergrad so I could do my master's because I wanted to learn how to do EMDR. But mm-hmm. there's so much time. There's just so much time. It doesn't feel like it when they're little, and it's a disaster in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I spent 2 weeks with my youngest daughter right after her bonus baby was born. And just in the throes of this, like all of a sudden, you know, and it's like, talk about potty stuff, like poop here and pee there and a bloody nose there. And I'm all in about 20 minutes. And I'm just like, what's happening? And then I'm like, good for me. I did this very well. What sat next to my husband so I could just like ground for a minute because he's so calm for me. And then I thought, this is what she does every single day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is her life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is. The idea of slowing down is a hard thing, but if we can just slow down and know that it the years are marching by so yeah. fast. Mm-hmm. And how do my children feel when they're with me?
Yeah. That's great.
How
That's
do beautiful. My grandbabies feel mm-hmm. when they're with Jaja?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's, I think,
yeah,
so important.
Thank you.
Okay, so I feel like I'm going to reiterate what you just said, because the two things I was thinking about sharing, you basically just said them both. But I'm currently in the midst of it. But I think now that the little years are now over, we had a toddler or a baby for 12 years without stopping. But now the youngest is 5 and a half, which just feels like, and then Duke being a teenager, feels like we're almost counting down mm-hmm. to knowing that even in a few years, he'll hardly be home. He'll be working. He'll be, you know, I feel like I keep coming back to this idea that I think we've put so much, you know, motherhood is all consuming when our kids are little and we have all these kids in our house, like what you're just describing, the stage your daughter's in, it's like all consuming. You really can't do much else. And I think that for a long time, mothers have felt this fear of like, well, I have to like keep something else going. I have to like have something that is outside of this because I don't want this to be my entire identity. As a backlash between a whole generation that then their kids left the house and then they were super dependent emotionally on their kids because they had no idea who they were. And I get where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. But I think the enemy is just using all this fear, distracting mothers from just slowing down mm-hmm. and embracing the intensity that is a very long season of your life. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I keep seeing by having women like you, Mom, and you, Sally, around me, of just recognizing this is one long, intense season of my life. Mm-hmm. This is not the whole of my life.
Right.
That I will have years and years and years to do other things. And it doesn't mean I do nothing mm-hmm. else now. No. Like, but I don't need to be in a hurry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that there is a whole life after the intensity of them needing me this much that I get to also look forward to. And it doesn't mean that they still won't need, that they won't need me at all or that I'm not a mom. I still am, but in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I just think if we could all, those of us in the midst of it who are watching all the moms on Instagram who are 30 and have this massive influence and platform and they're doing all these things and they have kids. I was just talking to a woman this morning about that, of like it, makes us feel this pressure that we need to be figuring out something else right now, which I don't know how you can slow down and be present to multiple kids and all of that and be frantically trying to figure all of that out. I don't think you can.
Well, you can do it, but you're a pretty mean person. Not you, but in general. I think it's like, yeah, they can do it, but they're probably not fun to hang with.
Yeah.
It's not a good person.
So I think this is not like a, even like, something I have learned and will leave with you. It's something I'm learning right now of like, I don't need to be in a rush. I can be praying through and preparing for whatever I think I want to do later or God's calling me to do later, but it can go very slow. Mm-hmm. But I look forward to when my kids are grown and I'm excited about whatever it is I get to do after that not in a like it needs to happen right now. But in a, this, how cool that this actually isn't my whole life. You know, it's not like then when I'm 50, I'm too old to do anything. Like, I think especially in the world we are in, I think in the ministry world.
Yeah, I think it's offensive to half the table if you say that.
No, but
at 50,
you know what I mean.
At 50, you're dead.
But
you're dead.
You're just... I think that you're just getting started when you're 50. I really do.
I
think that's when you finally actually have something to say. Like I'm getting closer to 40. I'm like, I'm excited about that.
Yes.
Like, because I feel like, especially women who have been mothers, that's, we are like earning our influence. Mm-hmm. We are earning our message. and earning our skills. Like, I wish that being a stay-at-home mom for 20 years held great weight on a resume. Like, can you imagine going from running a home to running a company? You'd be fantastic.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. If somebody with an MBA can't compete with a mom who's had to do it all. Right.
Yes.
Especially a mom with challenged kids.
Yes.
You know, I mean, my goodness. Okay, so if it's my turn.
It's your turn.
I don't think I felt that pressure to be more when I was raising my kids. And it makes me, I listened to you, Sally, and I know your story enough to know that you had to scramble to figure out how you were going to provide for your kids. That wasn't my story. And I'm so, it makes me so grateful that that the economic reality of our times when I was young and raising young children allowed me to not have a lot of luxuries, but still have a good life and be totally dedicated to my kids. I'm so glad there was no Instagram, that there was not that kind of connectivity. I didn't have anybody to compare myself to. Not really. My friends were all kind of like me. And I'm grateful for that. But I agree with what you're saying, Elizabeth. There is a lot of life after the intense years of motherhood. And I wish I could tell every mom that. There's years and years. I'm 64 now, and I have no need to slow it down for my future. I don't want to retire and learn how to golf. But there's just fun. Nothing is golfing. I think being out on a peaceful golf course would be really fun. But, you know, I'm not an athlete by any stretch of the imagination.
You can go for a hike.
You love hiking.
I love hiking and kayaking. But I think if I could go back and tell myself in those very isolating years, and I don't think I realized how much loneliness I carried in those years, that there is so much ahead, and just to thoroughly enjoy this moment, just thoroughly, I do not regret 1 minute I spent with my kids. I think adventuring, like you said, Greta, reading stories, slowing down to be with them. There's not one regret that I have. The only regret I have is the times I was distracted or impatient because I didn't even know what I wanted.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow. And Greta, last but never least, just drop some of those wisdom bombs on us.
I would encourage moms to lean into motherhood because we're living in a time and culture that tells us leaning into our children and into our roles as moms is not very significant. But I believe that that is not the truth. And we can lean into motherhood in a lot of different ways. But however we choose to lean into it, by being present with them, by slowing down, by, you know, throwing them really amazing birthday parties or baking with them, doing yard work, doing a garden, like reading stories on the couch. But to just really lean into our role as mothers who are investing in our children and knowing that that investment is shaping them into the next generation of kids who will be, you know, maybe they'll be a doctor, maybe they'll be a therapist, maybe they'll be a podcaster, maybe they'll be a gardener, whatever it is, they're going to make an impact on the world. And we are a part of that. And that's a beautiful thing. And we don't have a ton of time, like Diane said, to do that. We're never done being mothers, but those really high impact years are short. And just lean into it because it is a gift. The time that we get to be with our kids is such a gift. And if we lean into it and we're not ashamed or not embarrassed to say, I love being a mom, even though it's hard, I really do love being a mom. And it is a gift. I think that we have the opportunity to make a great impact in ways that we can't even imagine.
And I think it's important to say it's a gift to be a dad. And that's why I'm excited to talk about how we can also help our fathers in a big way. Diane, you have something.
just to add to all this, because we haven't really brought it up, I would also say keep investing in your marriage really intentionally. Amen. The whole time. Mm-hmm. And if we just focus on our kids, they're going to go. Yeah. And they, you know, you have sons, Greta, you have sons. And you really do need to lose your sons as far as that intimate relationship. Yes. That you thought would never be broken. Mm. Because they have to connect to their wives. Yeah. That way. And if it's almost easier sometimes for our sons to connect with mom because mom's been with them through all these years. Mm-hmm. But we have to intentionally let them, we want them to be one with their wives, mm-hmm. naked and unashamed. And we have to let go and let them do the next phase of their lives and not keep referring to them like they're 10 or 15.
Amen.
And so then you don't want to be a stranger to your husband. And I think it's easy for really great moms who love being moms and are really intentional about it, smart about it. It's really easy to just kind of not do the same things with their husbands. Mm. So I would just say you have a good husband, especially. And I know there's a lot of women married to very difficult men, and their best they're doing is to be able to keep that man in the family and keep peace in the home, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. But if you have a good husband, I think really investing in your husband is probably one of the best things you can do for your kids. Mm. Yeah. And it will also make the after kids really satisfying. By the time my fourth left the home, there was no empty nest for me. It was like, oh my gosh, this is so fun again. This is so fun. So easy and so fun. And granted, I have a really good and godly husband who has been learning to love for the last 45 years, intentionally learning to love. And that is not everybody's story. Mm. I'm really sorry if that's not your story. Mm-hmm. But if you have a good husband, don't forget about him in the midst of all this fun mothering. Mm.
That's a good word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Honey, did you hear that? I just want to make sure.
I heard. I won't forget about you.
This has been a treat, ladies. Thank you for giving time and energy this whole weekend. I'm not a mother, but on behalf of all the mothers, thank you so much for spending your time pouring out wisdom and grace. So thank you. Let's just do, can we say thank you to all the ladies that came on the count of three? Yes. One, two, three.
Thank you.